I got a home in Tennessee. That's the place I wanna be. Don't you rock it, don't you rock it, don't you rock it, don't you rock it, daddy, oh. Ever I get my new house done, give my old one to my son. Don't you rock it, don't you rock it, daddy, oh, rock it, my daddy, oh. Ain't no use sitting cry, sail away, lady, sail away. You'll be an angel by and by, sail away, lady, sail away. Don't you rock it, daddy, oh, don't you rock it, daddy, oh, don't you rock it, my daddy, oh, don't you rock it, daddy, oh.
Hello, and welcome to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman, and you can hear us at accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com and hear this program and past programs, or you can friend this program on Facebook. Today's program is mostly about Bruce Fine, who's a constitutional scholar and author. In the first segment, Dr. Mike Bittler interviews Bruce Fine. Bruce Fine served as Associate Deputy Attorney General under President Reagan from 1981 to 1982. Bruce discusses the War Powers Act, the renewal of the Patriot Act, and the cutting of national security and defense spending to balance the budget, and includes the best summary of the history of the U.S. Empire I've ever heard. And then, after that, Bruce Fine talks about why the Patriot Act serves the Empire and not the Republic. And then after that, Bruce Fine talks about Obama's executive order to institutionalize indefinite detention, conducted by Scott Harris. And then after that, from Tom Dispatch, Peter Van Buren, author of We Meant Well, How I Helped Lose the War for the Hearts and Minds of the Iraqi People, he talks about his book and his observations on Western-style nation-building.
And then lastly, the irony is it makes us less safe, because we end up creating enemies. Whether our intentions are good or wrong, in times of war, you make errors. There's the collateral damage, the predator drones. I mean, every day we're reading, you know, another family, another little child in Afghanistan, Pakistan, killed by a predator drone. It was a mistake. The rocket misfired, or the intelligence was faulty. And that makes people very angry. I mean, you could imagine yourself, if some other country shot, you know, predator drones in the United States and killed your family, you'd be mad as could be. You'd want some kind of resentment or revenge, sort of like Captain Ahab and Moby Dick. That's human nature. You can't suppress that. And again, it's one thing to respond, like to an attack on Pearl Harbor, where we have clearly a right of self-defense. But we're going abroad and fighting these wars when no one is even approaching, you know, having a danger that is the equivalent of an existential threat to our sovereignty. And I want to underscore to the audience that there's a difference between a threat, that we have a threat of murder every day. We have 17,000 murders in the United States, as opposed to an existential threat to the sovereignty, which justifies the extraordinary measures of war. And I want to underscore the signature of war is that it makes what is customarily murder legal. Sometimes you have to do it, but you really ought to be cautious about making what's customarily murder legal, because that's an invitation to anarchy and mayhem, if you will. And simply because there are evil people abroad, like Al-Qaeda, like the disciples of Osama bin Laden, doesn't mean we're, quote, at war with them. We have international drug traffickers. We're not at war with them. We fight them with very aggressive criminal prosecutions, conspiracy cases, and things like that. Osama bin Laden himself was able to be probably, as long as he was fleeing, he was properly killed. And he was subject to indictment, and you can use deadly force when you have a suspected felon who is fleeing and could create a danger to others. You can use deadly force in law enforcement, but that's far short of, say, the legal architecture of war, and which was said by Cicero thousands of years ago, in times of war, the law is silent, and the law is the only thing that protects us against government. It's Thomas Paine who said, the true patriot protects his country from his government, and that's what we need to do right now.
Wow, that is well said. Bruce, I something I want to ask you about, well, actually, we're coming up here on this next break. Maybe I ought to save it, but But I want to talk about this. That third segment I have with you is you talk about Bush, Cheney, and Obama philosophically being the same on national security matters. And I know I could take a few minutes to talk about, but I find that to me, that's something I've thought about. I'm sure other people have thought about. And when we come back, I just want you to comment a bit on how it could be possible that Bush and Obama could disagree on just about everything, but, you know, be best buddies when it comes to national security. So let me pick it up there when we come back.
All right.
And to my listeners, you're listening to Free Markets. I'm Mike Beitler, your host. My guest today is Bruce Fein. He is the author of American Empire Before the Fall, published by Campaign for Liberty. Welcome back to the third segment of Free Markets. I'm Mike Beitler, your host. My guest today is Bruce Fein. He is the author of American Empire Before the Fall, published by Campaign for Liberty. Well, Bruce, we've got one more segment here with you and several things I want to get you to comment on, but let me pick it up there about philosophically. You've talked about Bush and Obama being, you know, the same on national security matters. How is that even possible?
I think what it shows, Mike, is this problem of what I call it, the psychology of empire. It's not a problem of personality. It wasn't a Bush-Cheney problem or Obama problem. It pervades the entire culture. And that's what, in some sense, Obama's presidency confirms the empire. Because even with someone who with vastly greater constitutional erudition of Obama, he still basically follows everything. Obama has done this in Afghanistan. He's even escalated things. He's claimed state secrets to thwart people who have been tortured to recover for constitutional violations broader than President Bush. He has kept the detainees there without accusation or trial at Guantanamo Bay. He uses military commissions which combine judge, jury, and prosecutor prosecute people, something that's a real travesty to due process. Indeed, the Founding Fathers describe the combination of judge, jury, and prosecutor as the very definition of tyranny. You know, he uses executive privilege to conceal information from Congress. He has done like President Bush, and he's put an American citizen on an assassination list, Mr. Al-Waqi, without any court order or justification. And then he defends the assassination list by saying state secrets prevents any judicial review of what I've done. He continues to argue that he can surveil us without warrants in gathering intelligence that in some sense is supposed to thwart international terrorism. He's claimed the ability to go to war without any authority from Congress in Libya and otherwise. All these claims that he's making and assertions of power are indistinguishable from Bush-Cheney. To some degree, they even go beyond Bush-Cheney. And it shows, and I think he's received, if you will, bipartisan, both Republican and Democratic support in the Congress. And the American people haven't stood up and said, hey, wait a minute, we don't want an omnipotent president. That's what we fought against in 1776 when we got rid of King George III. And in fact, if you examine the presidential assertions of power under Bush, Cheney, Obama, they dwarf anything that King George III claimed over the American colony. Even he needed to go to the parliament to get appropriations to fight wars from time to time. Now, you know, we have $700-800 billion of Pentagon spending. It's unaudited. People don't even know where the money comes from and where it's spent. And the Constitution specifically says that any appropriations of Congress for the military has a 2-year lifespan, and then you've got to come back to ask Congress for more money because there is such a worry about a standing army. No one even knows where the money is being spent from, whether it's regarding an appropriation 2 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So we are talking about a whole constellation of earmarks of empire psychology and just asserting the authority of the United States around the globe. That's far independent of any particular individual. And the only way this is going to change is if the American people in Congress stand up and say, no, we do not want to be an empire. We want to be a republic. We want our influence abroad to be there by example. We wish freedom abroad well, but we fight only for our own. We don't need a $1.2 trillion national security budget. That number exceeds the collective defense expenditures of all the rest of the world combined. all the rest of the world combined, and we have the best scientists and whatever. So the irony of our empire is that as the existential threat to the United States has diminished to virtually zero, no one's going to be able to overthrow us. We have, through a series of leaders, concocted this danger and sense of fear that makes us act as though, you know, we're like the old 13 colonies on the Atlantic seaboard ready to be penetrated and occupied by the British Empire. And part of this is the responsibility of the leaders who have not sought to calm the American people down and say, yes, of course there are evil people abroad. We have to be sensible in how we respond to it, just like we're sensible in responding to 17,000 murders in the United States annually. We don't suspend habeas corpus, walk into people's homes without warrants, do away with due process with regard to trial. We have to remember, if you're to be free, if you're to have liberty, you have to accept some risk. You have to accept a risk that your neighbor is not a saint, you know, who's going to be beatified or canonized in the next day, because there's possibility of evil everywhere. And the only way you can live a risk-free life is to be imprisoned by with everybody else there. And we don't want that. That destroys the whole purpose of having a republic. And that's where I fault the leadership of the United States, instead of trying to place the notion of risk in proper context, and that, yeah, we can live a free life with risks abroad. Of course, there may be another criminal attempt, even as there was on 9/11. But that happens every day in the United States as well. We're risks of another Timothy McVeigh. But we understand we have the courage enough to accept risk because we know it is the oxygen of freedom. And we'd rather be free and somewhat at risk than be vassals and perfectly safe, because a life under vassalage is not worth living. That's the United States of America that was born in 1776. Unfortunately, it's not very much the United States in 2011, but that's where we need to go back to.
Well, so let me ask you, Bruce, I'm sure 99% of my listeners are against the Patriot Act, but how bad is the Patriot Act?
Well, it's terrible for several reasons, but the main reason it's bad is there's never any finding by Congress at any time, any witness, that with the Patriot Act, 9/11 wouldn't have happened. There's never any finding that the Patriot Act added any authority that didn't already exist in order to thwart international terrorism, criminal conspiracies, or otherwise. Again, it was a response to, okay, something bad happened, let's just make the government bigger. And, of course, the government wanted the power. They've been searched. That's what law enforcement wants. You'd expect them. Of course they want more power. It makes their job easier. They don't need warrants. They don't need probable cause. They can collect these huge databases. And, plus, you have new authorities. You get more money. You get to hire more people. You have a bigger bureaucracy. And even today, the Patriot Act, 10 years old, and I testified very recently, and I asked, where's the finding in 10 years that a Patriot Act authority thwarted even one international terrorist incident? And there's nothing there. Nothing. And that's totally irresponsible. In the United States, I say the right to be left alone, it's enshrined in the Fourth Amendment. It's perhaps the most cherished right amongst civilized people. It was the right that really gave the spark to the revolution of 1776 because of opposition to the British writs of assistance that enabled the British tariff officers to come in and rummage through any home and looking for goods that had allegedly been smuggled in. That was the spark of the American Revolution. And the Founding Fathers understood so much of our happiness and freedom depends on our right to just have our home as our castle. You know, we don't want anybody snooping around. We want that spontaneity, the ability to be nonconformist without having government suspicious that we're now turning criminal or things of that sort. And the Patriot Act turned that all on its head. The Patriot Act basically acts on the assumption that, hey, any one of us could be a Benedict Arnold. So the government should spy on everybody so you can have a chance to establish what in their ideas a pattern of innocence. So you should be happy that the government has a huge database if they haven't prosecuted you because now they know you're an innocent person. Well, my attitude is if someone wants to volunteer their entire life to the FBI, they're free to do so. But my natural endowment as a human being, Declaration of Independence, we're endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, and the foremost one is the right to liberty, the right to be free from government snooping without probable cause to believe you're implicated in crime. And that is what is basically turned on its head in the Patriot Act. Anything that's convenient for law enforcement trumps your right to be left alone, and that's why we ought to eliminate it. There are probably, Mike, I'd say millions, if not tens of millions of Americans who have been spied on, who have huge databases that they don't know about, because they aren't alerted when they're subject to electronic surveillance for foreign intelligence purposes, that should never have been victimized by these searches and investigations because of the Patriot Act. And if we can repeal the act and require all these databases to be expunged, we'd be back a long way towards being a free country that honors liberty and will not sacrifice our rights on a national security cross.
Yeah, that's well said. So So let's think about it this way for a moment, Bruce. So obviously we have to balance the budget. Our spending's out of control. What are you suggesting about cutting national defense and security spending? How much can we actually cut?
Well, my view is we could probably, right now, if you take a national security budget, that's more than the defense budget, because defense doesn't include, for example, Department of Energy, which houses our nuclear facilities, or it doesn't include Veterans Administration expenses, which really is the cost of fighting wars to reward our veterans who risk that last full measure of devotion for the country. So if we take the total budget, you know, probably runs the national security by $1.2 trillion, we can probably save anywhere between $500 billion and $1 trillion and not risk anything, nothing, to our safety and national security, insofar as what we're interested in, Mike, is defending ourselves against attack. Obviously, if your goal is to run the entire world and conquer every square inch of the planet to make sure it doesn't regress into something that we think is non-democratic, then your budget's going to be incredibly high. But that's not the mission of the United States. Not even the Constitution doesn't even authorize that. The Constitution designates a common defense, and defense is not a synonym for preemptive warfare. That's not. It's no more a synonym for preemptive warfare than black is a synonym for white. I mean, they're the opposite. And if we return our defense structure to just defending the United States, we can save staggering amounts. They say anywhere is up to $1 trillion a year, which is probably solves two-thirds of the budget deficit right away.
Well, Bruce, one more question I certainly got to get you to comment on. You made the comment about the American people need to stand up, and I'm thinking, I'm sure as people, as my listeners are listening to you today, they're saying, you know, Bruce Fein is right, I'm going to get his book, and I'm going to do something. What is the something that Americans can do to help stop this?
Well, it's an aroused public. Let me just go back briefly. My baptism in Washington was Watergate, and I remembered when the Saturday night massacre when President Nixon had fired Elliot Richardson and then Bill Ruckelshaus and the special prosecutor's office had been sealed by the FBI. And it was the American people who then wrote in 2 million telegrams and they didn't have emails and letters protesting the firing and said, no, you've got to appoint a succeeding special prosecutor. You can't shut down the investigation. It was the American people who prompted Congress to hold the Watergate hearings. And it's the same thing that's got to happen now. You have, as a citizen, greatest access to your member of Congress. How do you voice that? You need to go to the member and say, if you're not going to discharge your responsibility to defend and uphold the Constitution, which means preventing unconstitutional wars, which means making defense defense, not offensive warfare forever, and having a budget that respects the constitutional requirement that military appropriations have two-year lifespans and ends, the constituents say, I'm not voting for you. I'm going to vote for somebody else. And they even have to consider running for office themselves. But there's got to be a clear communication to that member. If they don't honor their oath to uphold the Constitution, their job is in jeopardy the next election cycle. Now, I understand it seems so remote. We're just one voter amongst all the other voters. It doesn't seem like it's any different than standing at the bottom of Mount Olympus or in Mount Everest and then saying, my gosh, it's such a long way to the top. But all great movements have begun with very bleak prospects of success. The first anti-slavery movements that had begun in the United States, strong ones with William Lloyd Garrison in 1831. He got tarred and feathered, and people said, oh, it'll never happen. We'll be for slavery forever. The women's franchise movement took 9 years before it was crowned with success. And so we cannot have a citizenry that gets discouraged simply because your voice doesn't seem to be dispositive overnight. You've got to take reward in the fact that your effort itself is its own honor. You are discharging your responsibility as a citizen the best that you can do. It's the highest and best office of the United States as citizen of America, and that kind of persistence ultimately will prevail, even if at the outset it looks like you may be a lonely stranger there.
Wow. Well, Bruce, this has been great. I really appreciate your insights and inspiring all of us to take some action. It's been terrific. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Mike, and soldier on there. That's what this country. That's what makes the country great. Now,
absolutely.
History is not determined. It's what you and I make of it, and that's what I hope to contribute to, in pulling the country back from its what I consider sins of domination.
And Bruce, we appreciate you because you're contributing right there in the belly of the beast. So
yeah.
Keep stirring it up for us. We appreciate you.
Okay. Listen. Thanks, Mike. You have a good day.
You too, Bruce. Thanks very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, I'll tell you about myself. I'm originally from the state of Texas. I love being from Texas just because we got our own language down there. We just make stuff up, man. We say stuff like, I'll tell you what. That's it. That's a complete sentence in Texas. Like, I'll tell you what. And everybody from out of state's like, what? I just told you. And Texans look at things completely different than anybody else in the country. Last time I was home, I was driving around. I had a flat tire. I pulled my truck in one of these little side-of-the-road gas stations. The attendant walks out, looks at my truck, looks at me. I swear to God, he went, "Tire go flat?" I couldn't resist. I said, "Nope." No, I was driving around. Those other three just swelled right up on me. And without missing a beat, he goes, "Well, the heat will do that." I just hate stupid people. They should have to wear signs and just say, "I'm stupid." That way you wouldn't rely on them, would you? You wouldn't ask them anything. Be like, "Excuse me. Oh, never mind. I didn't see your sign." It's like for my wife and I moved from Texas to California. Our house is full of boxes. There's a U-Haul truck in our driveway. My friend comes over and goes, "Hey, you moving?" "Nope. We just pack our stuff up once or twice a week. You'll see how many boxes it takes. Here's your sign." A couple of months ago, I went fishing with a buddy of mine. We pulled his boat into the dock. I lift up this big old stringer of bass. This idiot on the dock goes, "Hey, y'all catch all them fish?" "Nope." "Talked them into giving up. Here's your sign." That's why there's warnings on products, because it's stupid people, ladies and gentlemen. It's not for us, it's for stupid people. If there weren't any stupid people, you wouldn't see any warnings. Or at least they had to wear those signs. You just wouldn't sell the product, would you? Just be like, "I'm sorry, I can't sell you that." "Why not?" "Oh, I forgot." "Did you know on a tube of Preparation H it says, 'Do not take this orally?'" That's sad, isn't it? Because you know somebody wrote them a letter. "Dear Preparation H, I ate this whole dang tube. I still got these hemorrhoids. Man, my mouth's so small, I can't eat a jelly bean anymore. But I could whistle really good. We bought my daughter a bathtub doll. It's called Rub-A-Dub Dolly. Now, Rub-A-Dub Dolly floats around a bathtub with a little life preserver on. And on the life preserver, it says, "This is not a life-saving device." Well, what kind of idiot would see some guy drowning in the river and go, here's a Rub-A-Dub Dolly doll. Oh, thank God you saved my life. On a can of shaving cream, it says the boy's spraying us into an open flame. Where the hell was that guy shaving at? But he's sitting around the campfire one night, bought me a little bracelet. Nice, that's nice. A little tender. We bought a stereo receiver. If you bought a piece of stereo equipment, you know inside the box where they put that little package of drying agent? And on this in big bold letters, what does it say? "Do not eat this." Y'all ever bought a piece of stereo equipment thinking there might be something to eat in there? But you know somebody opened that box and went, "Well, look! I got a receiver and a pack of Chiclets. I got music and gum." Do you know on the back of a roll-on deodorant it says, "Do not apply this to your eyes"? Ladies, when was the last time you were out on a blind date? And he was good-looking, but he just had that stinky eye. I was working on my wife's car a couple weeks ago. I was putting a new fan belt on. Do you know on the back of a car fan belt, it says, "Be sure you stop the motor first"? Wouldn't you love to have been there the first time that happened? Some guy walks in the house, hands are all cut up. He's like, "Hey, Walt, what happened?" "I'm going to give you boys a little tip. You're going to put a fan belt on the car, you better shut that motor off first. You can't stop it with your hands, man. It's like a machine or something." If I hadn't seen this one, I wouldn't have believed it. But we were trying to sell our car about a year ago. Guy came over the house, drove the car around about 45 minutes. We get back to the house, he gets out of the car, reaches down, and grabs the exhaust pipe. And goes, "Damn, that's hot." See? If he'd been wearing a sign, I could have stopped it. I could have said, "Now, I know you're not going to understand this, but that's going to be hot." You've all seen this one on the back of a bottle of shampoo. It says, "Rinse, lather, repeat, rinse, lather, repeat." You know there's some idiot still in the shower. Because it doesn't say, "Dry your hair, try it again tomorrow, man." I'm sure some of you ladies here tonight use curling irons. Did you ever get a chance to read the warnings on these things? I swear to you, says the first time you use this curling iron, you may notice a slight odor and some smoke. That means your hair's on fire. I'm not making these up. The worst one says, do not insert this curling iron in any orifice. My God. What happened to good old-fashioned foreplay? What is it? Woo! Warm up the curling iron, honey. We're going to the fire. There's warnings on blow dryers. You know this? It says, do not use while sleeping. Well, Lord, hadn't that become a problem? Because I don't know about the rest of you, but I cannot count the number of times I've been sound asleep. Woke up, I was doing my hair. Dang it, I was sleep styling again. There's another warning that says, do not use this blow dryer in the shower. Who's writing this pamphlet? Y'all ever been in the shower? Honey, I'm done shampooing my hair. Toss me that blow dryer. I saw Idiot on TV this week. I was watching one of those animal shows on Discovery Channel. There was a guy inventing a shark bite suit. There's only one way to test that. You got to get bit by a shark. But the guy who was inventing it wasn't doing the test, and he had his buddy helping him out. That's the conversation I want to be in. Jimmy, come here. All right, Jimmy, got that shark suit on? Looks good. Now, what we going to do? We going to strap dead fish all over your body. Stay with me, Jimbo. Stay with me. They want you to jump in this pool of sharks, and you tell them it hurts when they bite you.
Well, all right. Hold my sign. I don't want to lose it.
More from great speeches and interviews after these messages.